This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, we'll hear from Republican Mike Perrin running for State House in the 60th District, which includes the city of Kalamazoo. But first, we discuss the aftermath of the shooting death of a teenager in Ferguson, Missouri. The president of the Metropolitan Kalamazoo branch of the NAACP, Charles Warfield, says while the fatal shooting of Michael Brown by a police officer is tragic, it does provide an opportunity to discuss race, law enforcement, and other issues. Charles Warfield, thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting us.
You issued a statement this week saying that the shooting in Missouri, which took the life of Michael Brown, brought attention to the consequences of overzealous police tactics. Can you give us some examples, maybe beyond Ferguson, of where overzealous police tactics have led to death, perhaps have led to protests and some of the problems that we saw in Ferguson?
Well, I think that I can't definitely name that one. I suspect they go on, and I hear word from other NAACPs that things come close to that. The problem, I think, is that we're sitting on the edge of something that could go off and start something, not just in a local community, but across the country, which Ferguson almost did, in terms of a flash uprising, so to speak, where people from around the country who have experienced this see a chance to get involved in something like Ferguson. For those of us who have lived for a period of time, we have seen this before. That kind of action has been seen before in this country and at a much higher level of devastation. Many people remember the California, uprising that took place, and it went on for 3 and 4 days where there were burning and looting and shooting at police and police shooting back, and it was really a horrible thing. Even back in the 80s, California blew up again, and even at the University of Oregon, where I was attending, a number of the students were coming down from California who had been involved. And these were not just black students. These were white and black students. Most people don't also remember, and as we go back that way, that some of the people who joined that group were a group called SDS, which were the Students for Democratic Society. And between the Black Panthers and other civil rights organizations, it was a pretty difficult time for those of us in the United States. I think we're on the edge. We could be on the edge. Let me say it that way. I hope we're not on the edge, but we could be on the edge of the cuspice of something like that being generated in this country. Not too long ago, the Kalamazoo Gazette, matter of fact, maybe last couple of days, had something about poverty and the people who are just above poverty, and then they were just hanging on, and then everybody else falls below that. So again, we, as a community, as a country, we're dealing with a lot of folk who have no money and no resources. The other part of it is that when we look at where the money is in this country, the 10% of the people own 90% of the wealth, and nobody seems concerned about that. Not only do they have all the wealth, but they don't pay any taxes. But people don't seem to be concerned about that. They accept it and tend to take their frustration out on particularly poor people.
You have kind of laid out there a pretty broad view of a lot of problems facing America.
Right.
At the moment.
Absolutely.
And I suppose that someone may hear that and say, but I didn't hear much about the police in there.
Okay.
Is what happens with the police perhaps a broader symptom, perhaps related to some of the deep-rooted problems
well,
in society?
Well, the police are asked to do a job which, in many instances, they didn't create, and also that it's difficult for them to handle. Because when people become overly frustrated and then police become overly zealous relative to what communities think they ought to be doing, then we've got a fire waiting for some gasoline to be thrown on. And so I have a real understanding of police work now that Chief Hadley has been in town, and we keep our communication lines open all the time, and as well as I think Deputy Chief Webster. We share information back and forth and talk about situations. I've been trying to get as many people to come to there. They have a community thing where they bring in people from the community and they show them what policemen do. And it's a 2-day period. And I went through it and I was really impressed. They take you to the shooting gallery. They take you to the fire, the place where they put out fires and so forth. And they let you know what police work really looks like. You get a chance to look at the dogs and what they do with them. And I've encouraged a lot of folk to go to that so that they have an understanding of what's happening. But that's a more educated group of folk who tend to come to that. The folk who are poor and who don't have that kind of understanding, it goes, all they know is that they're being mistreated. And so they strike back, and then we've got problems.
The Kalamazoo Department of Public Safety released a study that it did on racial profiling.
Right.
It found that Kalamazoo officers had been racially profiling in the city. Do you think that that is the sort of thing when a department commissions the study itself, puts it out there, blemishes and all, does that create a greater degree of trust or at least?
For me, it did.
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely. Because the chief called the NAACP and said, this is what's coming out. We need to talk about that. We have looked at it. And as a matter of fact, we were called in when the study was going on and before the study was implemented. We were called in and we met with the people who did the study. And I think it gave us some assurance that there was going to be some credibility and no glossing over problems that might be in, that they might find. Because if they would have come out and said, well, there's none in the community, and everybody would say, yeah, we knew that before, you started. We knew what the outcome was going to be. But when it came out, yes, you are, and there's some things you need to do about it. I think it gave, at least, let me speak for myself. It gave, I have had a lot of credibility come back into my mind about police when they were willing to, say, we've got some dirty clothes here that need to be looked at and examined. And many of us have been called in to talk about that.
From what you've seen since then, have things gotten better?
Well, for guys like me, yes. But for what happens is that poor people, their interaction with the police is, for the most part, not positive.
You do say in your statement that while the shooting of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri is tragic, it does provide an opportunity to create a dialogue.
Absolutely.
What would you like that dialogue to be about and contain?
Well, some of the things you and I have been talking about, that I think we have to talk about poverty. I think we have to talk about the whole question of who's poor and why. We have to talk about the pipeline from the neighborhood to the prison. And then we have to dispel the reasons why people end up there, because most people are willing to say, well, that's just who they are. Because there are a number of theories that are very popular. The constitutional inferiority theory is one that keeps popping up. And that's basically said they're born that way. How are you going to help them? Why are you spending money on them? They can't help it. They're born that way. There's another one that says that not only are you constitutionally inferior, but you have accumulated environmental deficits, which means over time you go backwards rather than forward. There are three theories that people throw folk into, particularly minorities and particularly poor people, and they say, and those theories just dismiss that group of folk because they say there's nothing you can do to help them because they have these three deficits. That's pretty tough to overcome. That's pretty good. Now, the one piece that oftentimes at least begins to move toward some level of equality is where are the votes? You see, if all of a sudden you have people beginning to wake up and see my vote, but poor people don't think that way. They say, what is it going to do for me now? We got a black president now, and I'm as bad off as I was when he wasn't president. We had a white president, and maybe we were as bad off as it was then. So a lot of them are concrete kind of folk. Has my situation changed because I went to vote for somebody? And so a lot of our folk, for instance, NAACP and other organizations are out trying to register people to vote. Well, the folk will stand in the middle of the door and say, yeah, I voted last time, but I'm still in the same house. I still don't have a job. I'm still not able to feed my family. So a lot of what you have to do, I think, is say, this relates to this. One of the things they can say is many of them can, but the connection has to be made for them. The reason why you're able to go in and get health care when you couldn't a few years ago is because this happened. Then all of a sudden they say, oh, now I see. Okay.
Is it possible in this country at a very polarized time, I think it's fair to say, to have an honest and open dialogue about race?
Among folk who believe that, I mean, I don't think it's possible with some groups that they don't want to hear that.
Is this who you're referring to before, the people who believe inferiority?
Yeah. The constitutional inferiority people say, well, you all are born that way. Some of my relatives when in World War II were over there, and people kept looking. They were soldiers in Germany, and the people kept looking at me, and they said, why do you keep going by? They said, well, we understand you all have tails. And my cousins, some of them came back and told us about those stories that happened to them, that they'd been told by the white soldiers that were there, okay, white American soldiers that were there. So there's still a lot of that wives' tales kind of stuff about who we are and what we are and why we are like we are. You know, I've had people call me and say, Chuck, this is so-and-so. And we went, I said, hey, how you doing? And they said, are you still heading to NAACP? I said, yes, I am. They said, man, you can't do anything for them folk. I mean, see, and so some of us have lived long enough to know what that feels like even here in Kalamazoo, because there were places when I was growing up, but we couldn't go.
You can't help them folk. I mean, is
they're talking about other black people.
Other black people. Yeah, so you're separate.
Yeah,
from the
yeah,
other
you're
black
separate.
People.
You're part of the middle class. What are you doing hanging out with that crowd? You know, and sometimes it happens. It comes from black people. They said, Warfield, over here. We're over here.
We the middle class.
Yeah. Here. We the middle class over here. What are you doing over there? I say, I think that's where I came from. You know, if I can pull out, and I wore cardboard in my shoes, and I did all the other things to, you know, hand me downs. I never had a new pair of anything. I got a new pair of shoes for Christmas, maybe. But somebody took the time to say, this guy's worth working with. I ended up at University High School. And see, that was white people who said that when I got through at Lincoln School, where there were two schools, Roosevelt and Lincoln. When I got through at Lincoln School and I kept getting moved up, all of a sudden somebody said, this kid has got somebody needs to do something. Next thing I knew, I'm up at University High. There are only two blacks of us up there on the campus here at Western. Okay. And I said, Dad, what happened? He said, and he named the person. He said, they saw something that they wanted you to come up there. Because the other thing they said, they didn't want them to have the experience of just being an all-white school and no blacks. So as a result of me being there, four or five others came in, my brother came in, all that kind of thing. But there are people. See, I don't ever, you know, dismiss people of a different hue than I am. See, I just, then that makes me as much of a bigot as they are toward me. I mean, if I say, well, you know, that's all white people, that makes me guilty too. So I know what it feels to be on the other end. So I just think that, but it's tough sometimes, but otherwise I just think we have to work at it.
Charles Warfield, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much for having us.
Charles Warfield is the president of the Metropolitan Kalamazoo branch of the NAACP. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. There will be a new representative in Michigan's 60th State House District next year. Sean McCann is running for State Senate, which creates an open seat. Mike Perrin is the Republican nominee for the 60th District, which includes the city of Kalamazoo. Mike Perrin, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Gordon, for having me.
We're also joined by WMUK reporter Savilla Mann.
Hello, Gordon.
Mike Perrin, why don't you begin by telling us a little bit more about yourself and why you're running for State House.
Okay. Well, my name is Mike Perrin. I've lived in Kalamazoo for over 14 years. I got my bachelor's degree and my master's degree here from Western Michigan University. I'm married with two children. My wife is a special education teacher in Kalamazoo, and my two children are 8 and 6. The reason I'm mainly running for state representative in the 60th district is I'm really strong on reviving education in Michigan. Job growth, limiting taxes. I'm a very pro-constitutional guy, and I just think we need a good representative, somebody that's lived in the district for a while, somebody that's been involved, to step up and take on the new challenge.
Savilla, first question for Mike Perrin.
Let's start with education. When you say reviving education, what do you have in mind?
Well, right now we are under the Common Core standard in the state of Michigan. And as my wife is a teacher, as I said before, in talking with other educators, Common Core is kind of a one-size-fits-all way of education. It focuses mainly on math and reading. What it does that really hurts teachers is that it takes away some of their creativity. Not only that, is with Common Core, the limited amount of education that gets to our children, because it's government controlled and not locally controlled, has a big effect on the way that our youth learn.
What about charter schools? The Detroit Free Press did a big series just recently, found that there were some problems with accountability, money that couldn't be documented, that sort of thing, going to some of the charter schools in the state. Does the state need some tougher oversight on charters and how they're spending taxpayer dollars?
You know, I don't really know. I'll be honest with you. I mean, obviously, any education system that is monitored by the state, they should be watching it.
Savilla?
What about funding from the state for public K through 12 education? Are you satisfied with the current level?
You know, I think that we should try to put more into our education system. I think where there's resources available, we should try to put it into the education system. Education is the building block that provides us with the workforce of tomorrow. So, yeah, I mean, I think that if we can invest in our youth and our children, we'll have less violence on the street, we'll have better educated people, and we'll have a better opportunity to grow.
Where would you get additional money if you're going to put it into K through 12 education?
Don't we all wish we had that answer? You never know. There's obviously some overspending in a lot of different departments. And what Michigan really needs to do is kind of get and collaborate with all the legislatures, find out where money's being wasted, where money's not needed, where money's surplus, and, you know, kind of go through and find ways to allocate that money to where it actually is needed and invest in Michigan.
Savilla.
Let's talk about roads.
I knew that was coming.
It always comes up if you've driven on a road in Michigan recently. You know roads are an issue. When it comes to roads, Governor Snyder has said the state needs somewhere between $1 billion, $1.5 billion, maybe even north of that, dollars to get the roads not beautiful and perfect, but acceptable and good. And I'm wondering, from your perspective, is that a figure you would agree with? And where does the money come from?
You know, it's very good questions. And to be honest, I don't know. And a lot of people don't know. The governor doesn't know. I don't know what the exact cost would be. I don't think anybody does. If you drive around Michigan, which I drive around constantly, especially with my job, I mainly work in the Sturgis-St. Joe County area. I mean, yeah, the roads are rough and they're bad. And in order to bring businesses to Michigan, we need to invest in the roads in order to make, you know, traffic and infrastructure, you know, better. How to get the money without raising taxes? I don't know. I'm not a big proponent of a guy who likes to raise taxes. I'm not for tax raising. But I also understand that it is very important to make sure that we have good, safe, quality roads.
What about vehicle registration fees?
It's a thought. I mean, I could see that. They're pretty high, as they are now. I mean, you know, depending on the type of car you have, your plates are going to cost you different amounts of money and stuff like that. So it really just depends. It depends on the amount of fee. It depends on, I mean, if you're talking 25 cents per driver in the, you know, state of Michigan, and if that could raise the money, I think, you know, most voters would be okay with a 25 cent increase. But that's not for me to say. That's up for the people that I support to say. That's up for the people of the 60th district to kind of come to me and say, hey, Mike, we need to, you know, talk to you about this legislation. We need to talk to you about this tax. And I would be grateful to hear from anybody, you know. So, yeah, I mean, if the people who I'm supporting and voicing for, which is everyone here in the 60th district, then I have to listen to them and I have to go with their judgment, whether I like it or not.
Sevilla?
You mentioned the role of good roads and the health of the economy in the state. In terms of growing the economy in general, what's your approach to that?
Well, you know, I would say right now we're on kind of the right track. You know, with Governor Snyder doing the right to work legislation, which did not eliminate unions. I mean, a lot of people out there, you know, on one side of the fence say, oh, we've destroyed the union system. The unions aren't destroyed. They just gave people a right to work. It's if you want to be a union member, be a union member. But if you don't, then now you don't have to be. You don't have to take that extra money and pay for their support or, you know, guidance. But, well, I'm sorry, go back to what you were asking again. What was...
How do you grow the state's economy? Where do you put your efforts? Do you cut taxes for businesses? Where do you put your money?
Well, I mean, a lot of small businesses, you know, are being taxed. And we just recently did the small business tax elimination on the last ballot. So that kind of eliminated... personal property tax. Eliminated, you know, businesses paying over and over again, you know, on a tax of, you know, stuff that they've already had and paid taxes on. I think that's the right steps that we're doing to bring people here. You know, with the right to work, the elimination of the personal property tax for small businesses, it's really starting to open the door. We haven't seen the influx of it yet. It's just something that just recently passed. It's kind of being slowly weeded out. But I think those are on the right step. So as your next state representative, I would be in support and favor of continuing ideas and growth of that nature to have that happen.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with Mike Perrin. He is the Republican nominee in Michigan's 60th State House District, which includes the city of Kalamazoo. Also here is WMUK reporter Sevilla Mann. Sevilla.
The Environmental Protection Agency has pushed back the date for its announcement on the Allied Paper site in Kalamazoo a few times, but it will be making that announcement at some point. As to how it plans to deal with that site, whether that's hauling away the PCB-contaminated dirt or capping it, leaving it there, containing it, which is not a popular option locally, what's your stance on what needs to happen at Allied Paper?
Well, obviously, we need to make the site safe, and we need to make it safe for the residents in the 60th District and all of Michigan. Contaminated material could be bad and could spread to everyone. So, yeah, we need to look into it. We need to make sure that that whatever happens is that, you know, the people around it are safe and that we take care of it in a proper manner.
Do you think the state should allow hydraulic fracturing or fracking, or should there be tighter regulations on it if it's going to exist?
That one's a tough one. I've flipped back and forth. You know, there's different pros and cons to it. I know it's been done for years. What it does long term on the environment, I don't know. I wished I could tell everybody out there listening right now that I have a 100% way that I feel about it, but I have flipped, you know, sides back and forth, and I would need to know more and learn more and really in-depthly study it when that comes up.
Sevilla.
The state's Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act currently doesn't cover discrimination based on sexual orientation. So currently it's legal to deny someone housing or a job if they're gay or lesbian, or in any case, if that person objects to the other person's sexual orientation. Would you support amending the Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act to change that?
You know, I know John Hoadley is...
Hoadley,
sorry. Is very much in support of doing that too. And I, you know, discrimination is horrible and awful everywhere, and bullying. I mean, it's bad. Would I support it? Yes, probably. I would support, you know, adding that, you know, the GLBT community be added to that. You know, we don't want people to be discriminated against. I'm, like I said, I'm a very constitutional guy. I mean, all men are created equal, you know, in the eyes of our forefathers. And we should treat everybody as they should be treated, which is great. I mean, no discrimination whatsoever.
The courts are ultimately going to decide this, but where do you come down on same-sex marriage?
I'm against it. I'm for traditional marriage. I mean, it's my Catholic upbringing that, you know, God's law is man marries a woman. So I believe in marriage being more of a religious, you know, sort of sacrament, and the state just sort of accepts it. So for gay marriage and the state of Michigan, I know it's going to be decided ultimately probably by the Supreme Court, but personally I'm against it.
Let me ask you about some various sort of governmental reforms that come up just about every election cycle. Do you think that Michigan should keep its current setup for term limits?
Term limits?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Keep them where they're at.
I think there should be term limits on everybody. On everybody. Senators, congresspeople, everybody should have term limits. Nobody should be in office for longer than 3 terms and 2 years apiece. Or I would say the maximum should be 8 years, period, for anybody, period.
Do you favor any changes in the way that they currently draw legislative districts? It's currently done by the legislature and has to be signed by the governor. So as some people have said, what this amounts to is politicians picking their voters instead of the other way around. Are you okay with it?
Well, you know, we just got redistricted. That's why we have the new Senate position open up with, you know, Sean McCann and Margaret O'Brien going for it. That's a pretty even district. I mean, Democrats and Republicans are about 50-50 in that area. So,
but that's pretty rare across the state. If you look at most other districts, the primary is often where the race is settled.
Well, to be honest, you know, I only know what's kind of more local here, you know, to be solid on. I don't know what they're doing over in Macomb County or somewhere like that. I haven't really investigated how they redistrict over there. But what I can do is speak from personal knowledge of what's going on over here. When we redistricted over here, it made it more equal. It made it, you know, a very equal, viable spot for, you know, Republicans and Democrats to go at.
That state Senate district was.
Yes. Yes.
Now, some people will look at the state House district you're running in and say,
it's 70-30.
There you go.
Yes, I'm the underdog, folks. Yeah, it's right now it's 70% Democrat, I think 30% Republican, you know, viewed. And, you know, Kalamazoo's been known for that, but I've loved the community. I've loved this area. But you know what, though? I'm going to tell you something here. Everybody that's listening, one of the main top other reasons that I'm running is I'm giving somebody else the chance to go, you know what, I don't like that guy. Man, why isn't there just somebody I can support and vote for, like a Republican that I want? That's why I'm there, man. I'm giving people a choice.
Mike Perrin, thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir.
Mike Perrin is the Republican nominee for the 60th State House District. That includes the city of Kalamazoo. And also thanks to WMUK reporter Sevilla Mann.
Thank you, Gordon.
Other candidates have been invited for interviews on West Southwest. We'll bring those interviews to you between now and Election Day. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.